The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, a warning, the following item will contain references to child sexual abuse. Buried Secrets is the RT documentary made in association with the Irish Daily Mail, which aired last night, and the documentary maintains that the Catholic Church covered up abuse allegations against the late Bishop Eamon Casey.
I remember being abused in Kerry, in Inch, Galway Cathedral, in the Bishop's Palace in Galway. He's got his priests, his bishop stuff on, he's got his purple socks. He would abuse me in his vestments. He had no fear of being caught. He thought he could do what he liked, when he liked, how he liked. He was almost like he was incensed that I would dare fight against him, that I would dare try and hurt him, I would dare try and stop him. I do remember the first time I fought back and the shock on his face. It's like, it didn't make any difference.
Now, that's a clip from that documentary which aired last night and which is available on the RT player. To talk about the man himself, Terry Prone, chairperson of the Communications Clinic, and Anne Sheridan, the reporter, the news editor with the Daily Mail, the Irish Daily Mail, who was behind this documentary. Anne, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
How did this come about? Because it's been a long time in the making.
Yes, it has been a very long time in the making. I guess I've been on the story for almost 8 years, really, in fact. I was a reporter with the Limerick Leader in 2016, and I was there for just over a decade. And I got an anonymous tip-off about allegations or complaints made or proceedings lodged to the High Court. I looked at that. I saw that there were a number of proceedings lodged against Bishop Eamon Casey. I later discovered that they were for child sexual abuse. One case was proceeding at that time, and another case had been taken in 2001. And for a number of years, the story kind of went cold, really, until I moved to the Irish Mail on Sunday. And eventually I was contacted by Patricia Donovan, who knew that I wanted to speak to her. She contacted me, I think, somewhat out of the blue in and around 2018, 2019.
Now, to explain to our listeners who didn't see the documentary last night, Patricia Donovan was Bishop Eamon Casey's niece.
That's right, yes. Patricia Donovan came forward in 2005. She reported her complaint of alleged abuse to the Gardaí, to the UK police, where he was living at that time. Father Casey, as he was then known, was living and working in the Diocese of Arundel in Brighton. And he had been there for a number of years after he returned from Ecuador, where he spent, I think, just over 6 years. Obviously, after the very dramatic fallout from the 1992 revelations that he had an affair with Annie Murphy and that he fathered a child, Peter. So Patricia told her story to the Irish Mail on Sunday in 2019. And it's taken, I suppose, up to now to produce this documentary.
Now, tell me about the allegations that she made. What age was she when she said the abuse occurred?
Patricia said that she was 5 years old when the abuse first occurred in 1967. She said that abuse continued for over 10 years.
For over 10 years. Now, there are more accusations as well against him, because one person's allegations probably would not constitute the basis for a compelling documentary. What else and who else alleged?
In total, we have five complaints of alleged child sexual abuse. They date back to the 1950s in Limerick, and they continue up until the 1980s in Galway when he was Bishop of Kerry. So we have five complaints. Three of those relate to the Limerick Diocese or his time in Limerick. There's another complaint which was lodged with the Kerry Diocese, which allegedly occurred when he was Bishop of Kerry. And then we also finally have the complaints made in Galway, again by a minor when he was Bishop of Kerry, or Bishop of Galway, sorry. In addition to that, the Galway Diocese has also confirmed that a number of adult women came forward in more recent years, I think in and around 2014 or 2016, and they made complaints that They had adult sexual relations with Bishop Casey in the 1960s, and the Galway Diocese also said that they regarded these relationships as an abuse of trust.
All right. Now, to try and understand how someone could get away with all of this while being a man of the cloth, initially a priest and then a bishop, Terry Prone has watched, I suppose, the rise and demise of Bishop Casey over the years. A charismatic man.
He was the personification of the new church. He was the bishop that was on television all the time. He didn't talk old conceptual dogmatic stuff. He was funny. He was classically the kind of guy you'd like to have a pint with. And everything was forgiven because of that. I mean, everybody knew that he drove dangerously, for example, and that he drove with drink taken. But sure, God, wasn't he an authentic figure? Wasn't he one of our own? Wasn't that the way a normal bishop would behave? All of the time, excuses were made for Eamon
reckless
Casey.
Behaviour.
Reckless behaviour.
And that may be the key to understanding him.
That's absolutely right. Now, we had no notion of the issues that Anna's talked about in the 1950s. The first time that I had any direct, and it wasn't much of a direct contact with Eamon Casey, was my parents didn't think much of him because my parents were suburban Dublin and there's no more elitist than that. And they thought he was a camaulay-singing and gobshite and they didn't want anything to do with him. So fine. I was doing freelance work in the Catholic Communication Centre, which at the time was at the top of Booterstown Avenue.
Yeah.
And I was doing a job for Brian Darcy. And the next thing, Bishop Casey arrived because Throker's headquarters were there and he was the chair or whatever, Throker. And to see him arrive in, Pat, was to see Bruce Springsteen. I mean, the priests and the nuns and the people who were there couldn't wait to get cups of tea into his hands and biscuits and hang around for him to be funny and the banter and all that stuff. So I slid out into the grounds and I sat down at one of those bench-like picnic tables. And I noticed that in the distance, this priest named Father Tom Savage, who I years later married, was walking up and down reading his breviary, you know, the thing that priests have to do every day. So fine, when he was finished with that, he came over and I said, Bishop Casey is inside. And there was a long silence and he said, is he? And I said, do you know him? And he said, oh, I know Eamon Casey. I know Eamon Casey for what he is. And he would not be pleased if I arrived in front of him in there. And I said, why? And he said, because he stole my scholarship and passed it off as his own. And he explained, Tom was the very first Catholic priest to be sent to study in Queen's University, Belfast. Did a sociology postgrad, involved research into homelessness, which at the time was a huge issue in London.
Yeah.
And a dissertation grant. And then somebody in the hierarchy said, would he meet this priest from Kerry who was interested in emigrants and homeless? Sure, no problem. Tom briefed Eamon Casey and gave him a copy of the unpublished thesis. Grant, happy out. But 6 months later, Tom is suddenly beginning to realise that there's a new public expert on homelessness. And it's Eamon Casey, and he's on every radio and television programme, and he's quoting research that he did and statistics. Tom's research. And Tom, it didn't bother Tom because it wasn't going to affect him one way or the other. It just made him feel nothing but contempt for Eamon Casey. But I had mentioned this in my book that I wrote last year. But it was only when I was reading the 5-page coverage in the Mail on Sunday that it suddenly struck me that little incident was more significant than it looked, because what it showed was that the very beginning of Eamon Casey's fame, charisma, presence in the Irish church was based on stealing something and lying
about it. In other words, he was a dishonourable man.
He was a dishonourable man from the start. And that trend continued right to the end.
So he stole Tom's work, and in the documentary you outline other things that he stole as well, church funds to pay off his liabilities.
Yes, that would have emerged in 1992 when the Irish Times broke the story that not only did he father a child with Annie Murphy, but he also used diocesan funds to pay for his son's education.
And the excuse of the church was a bishop actually has charge of all those funds, so him using it for whatever purpose was his business rather than theft from the parishioners.
That was the position that the church put forward at the time. They also defended him, saying that the monies were later repaid. We know that those monies were cobbled together, if you like, from a multitude of different donors, supporters of Bishop Casey. I don't know who those people are.
Yeah. Now, we'll go back to Terry on this one. When Bishop Casey was exposed as having had an affair with Annie Murphy, who was a relation of his, distant enough, and then fathered a child, at the time, there was a lot of scandal breaking about predation of children by priests in the church. And there was a kind of a, well, at least it was with a grown woman and not with a child attitude. So many people had a less than condemnatory attitude to him.
Absolutely. And people, not enough people actually read Annie Murphy's book, wherein it is very clear that she was desperately vulnerable when she came to Ireland. And it's by inference, you can say, ha. So this was where he started, or this was part of a continuum of him spotting particularly vulnerable women. But if you even look at the Gay Byrne interview with Annie Murphy on The Late Late Show, Gay was widely condemned for the fact that towards the end of the interview, he said something like about their son, that if he was half the man his father was, he wouldn't be doing too badly. Annie Murphy took that as a personal insult to her. But what it
her reply was,
I'm not so bad
myself, Mr. Byrne.
But that was to miss the point of the whole thing, which was that Gay, in common with the whole of Ireland at the time, believed that Eamon Casey was a phenomenally good man, a really decent, accessible, achieving bishop, and that this affair was just one little slip, one thing that he just couldn't manage properly. Whereas now we know, and indeed largely due to the Mail and to the documentary, that what we had was a man who from the 1950s onwards was doing the most dreadful things to vulnerable women and children.
Now, Anne, the extraordinary thing is how this was happening more or less in plain sight. I mean, there were people who might have made complaints earlier. In the case of his niece, it turns out from your documentary work that she was also being abused by her own brother, which is...
Yes, that's right. Patricia said that in the programme last night. She was also abused by her brother, Father Michael Donovan. Now, he was a priest for Limerick. What we also revealed in the programme as well, too, was that there was multiple other allegations against him. During Bishop Casey's time as the Bishop of Galway, he actually moved him to his own diocese after complaints first started being lodged with the Diocese of Limerick. The current Bishop of Limerick and the current diocese have said to us that that was wrong, that that was a decision made by the then Bishop, Dr. Jeremiah Newman, that this was unacceptable and should not have happened, that he was simply moved from one diocese to another when these complaints started to be lodged in relation to Father Michael Donovan.
Now, the question of why nothing was done, I mean, when Patricia Donovan made that complaint to the Gardaí and the DPP decides no charges will be preferred, you had a judicial figure on the documentary last night saying, well, there is a problem because you have what's called false memory syndrome, where people particularly have gone into some sort of therapy to recover from the abuse, and they would probably need to look at the provenance of that therapy, blah, blah, blah. And the DPP won't waste the state's money unless there's some reasonable chance of conviction, a kind of a, if you're in a he said, she said situation, particularly historically, it might be very difficult. Is that a fair assessment of the DPP's position, or was the DPP's position wrong?
we don't know the reasons behind the DPP's decision. What Patricia was told informally by Gardaí, who called her, I think it was in August of 2005 or 2006 rather, to tell her that the DPP was not bringing the case forward. I think they told her at that time that there was not sufficient or enough evidence to bring the case forward. They had also interviewed Bishop Casey, the Gardaí in Limerick. He was questioned for a number of hours. Bishop Casey later gave a statement to the Irish Times after he was interviewed, and he told the paper that he was absolutely amazed by the speed of the decision by the DPP, and he claimed that he had only been interviewed by the Gardaí a few weeks prior to them making their decision. Now, Patricia never received any communication from the DPP as to why the case wasn't taken forward. It has been a development in more recent years that the DPP will actually contact complainants in various cases and outline the reasons why a decision has been taken, but that communication was never received by Patricia.
Yeah, I mean, the DPP, they used to have a thing, we don't explain, we make a decision and that's it, we don't explain. And maybe that was the rationale in this particular case. Now, what did Rome know about all of this? Because they did sanction him. They prevented him from officially or privately, publicly saying Mass. But that is not to say that he did not masquerade as someone who could.
Yes, that's right. The Vatican in a statement to RTE told us that a decision was made to restrict his ministry or to ban him from ministry sometime before 2006. They haven't set down the specific year. One would assume that it was in 2005 when Patricia came forward and made her allegations. However, we know that the Vatican received complaints about him from 2001 onwards. So by the time that a decision was made to formally and to reiterate the ban against him in 2007, the Vatican at that time had at least three complaints on file against Bishop Casey. More of them would arrive then after that point. In the Vatican statement, they said that they continued to receive allegations in and around 2015, 2016. At that point in time, they said that they essentially couldn't bring the case forward any further against him. At that time, he was in his late 80s. He was suffering from Alzheimer's and he was living in a nursing home in County Clare. Now, what we do know is that the complaints would have been received by the Pope. It would have been Pope Benedict XVI at that point in time. There would have been a decree that would have been sent to Galway, and it would have outlined the restrictions on his ministry and the reasons for doing so. We do know from Galway Diocese, certainly, he was never allowed to say Mass publicly again. He could only say Mass privately in his own home. And if he did attend the church, he was only meant to attend in a capacity as a member of the congregation. Now, what we revealed in the Irish Mail on Sunday at the weekend, and which was also aired in the programme last night, was that he then went on to officiate or to concelebrate Masses in several dioceses over many years. They included Galway, Wexford and Limerick. I suppose one of the really shocking things to people is that the church never communicated this ban to the public. So a lot of people in Galway in particular were quite aggrieved by this. They were still major fans of Bishop Casey. They weren't aware to any great degree of the volume of child abuse allegations against him. So they struggled to realise that he was not allowed to say public Mass. Up until that point in time, the church's position was that he is still suspended and that they wouldn't reveal anything further about, obviously, the Vatican's investigation. But also, similarly, the various dioceses around the country, they were never informed that there was restrictions on Bishop Casey's ministry.
All right, Terry, you know, in the earlier part of this narrative, before the Annie Murphy story broke, he, whatever complaints that might have been made, he was just too big to fail, wasn't he?
Oh, nobody would have gone up against him. Nobody would have even criticised him.
He's given credit in the documentary for the man who brought the Pope to Ireland.
Yeah,
you know, to
and
Galway.
He and Michael Cleary, and let's be clear, he and Michael Cleary were best buddies. We now have to say, wow, what does that tell us about the church at the time? Were prancing and posturing around as almost the main Catholics welcoming the Pope to Ireland. And there are still unanswered questions, because if you look at child abuse, the nature of the child abuse accusations made against Bishop Casey, that doesn't stop ever. It is always repeated always. And therefore, you have to say, what happened in South America? And why was he sent then to Arundel and Brighton, which had a chaotic history of its own, with its bishop convicted, as it were, by the church law of an affair with two separate women? The management of Casey, after it was clear that he was a problem, goes back to the church deciding, look, out of sight, out of mind, Shaheel, do his penance out in South America and it'll all be great. And I think, Pat, that Irish people believed that, accepted that, and wanted to accept it. Sure, God love him.
But they never really knew about the child abuse.
They never had a clue.
Yeah, as far as they were concerned, he'd had an affair with a woman who had been, she wasn't like a 17-year-old virgin. She was a
divorced.
Woman who had been married. Yeah,
she was
and
divorced. Yeah.
Did you find any evidence, Anne, of predatory activity in South America?
No, none whatsoever. I contacted the diocese where he was based at that time, and they said no, that there were no allegations against him. Trocra, he was director or chairman of Trocra for many years. They also said that they have received no other allegations against him. Various dioceses in the UK also said, again, no allegations against him. But quite curiously, the Archdiocese of Southwark and the Diocese of Westminster has refused to confirm or deny if they have received any allegations about him at all, particularly in relation to his time working in London in the 1960s. That is somewhat kind of a gap in the narrative of the story. We do know that two women complained to Galway that they had adult sexual relations with him in the 1960s. We don't know categorically that they happened in Limerick or in London, rather. He did tend to travel quite frequently between Limerick and London at that point in time.
Terry?
On the issue of Trocra, and on the thing that you raised, Pat, about him being almost unattackable, the slogan of Trocra at the time was, live simply that others may simply live. And there was a minor question
raised. By the way,
raised.
We should remember Justin Kilcullen, who passed.
Oh, dear Justin.
Who was a great man.
Good,
who was the
good
boss
man.
Of Trocra.
And such a sudden, sad death. But Eamon Casey had a Trocra credit card and used it phenomenally freely for luxurious dinners with bunches of people and really good wines, expensive wines. And I remember at the time somebody raising a query about, was this living simply that others might simply live? And Pat, that accusation died because he was Eamon Casey, he was impregnable.
Terry Prone, Chairman of the Communications Clinic, columnist with the Irish Examiner, Anne Sheridan, News Editor with the Irish Daily Mail. Anne, your paper no doubt will continue coverage of all of this, and the documentary itself is called Buried Secrets. It's available on the RT Player. Thank you both very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.